Williams. The title of the talk is Reproductive Coercion Among High School Students. Dr. Williams is an assistant professor in obstetrics and gynecology and health behavior at the University of Kentucky. Her research career has focused on the effects of various forms of violence on women's health.
Thank you very much. To begin with, as everyone, I have no financial or commercial interest to disclose. And I wanted to start by acknowledging a bunch of people who help with the study. So first, my University of Kentucky co-authors who are listed here. And also, this is a collaboration. We're a CDC-funded project, and we collaborate with the Kentucky Association of Sexual Assault Programs. And when you see the numbers that I'm going to present, you'll start to understand why I'm thanking them so much. And then I personally was funded by the UK University of Kentucky Building Interdisciplinary Research Careers in Women's Health Training Grant. I'm going to start by defining reproductive coercion, just because I think this is an area that's starting to get a lot more attention in the last few years, but sort of want us all on the same page. So reproductive coercion can be defined as a male partner pressuring their significant other through verbal threats or physical aggression to become pregnant. And I have male partner in the definition here, and I'm going to sort of take that back in a little bit. But this is how it's generally been defined. It may include things such as forced sex, fear of violence if you refuse sex or ask to use contraception or condoms, and then actual destruction of contraception, which we tend to talk about as contraceptive interference or birth control sabotage. The topic, I think, first got attention really in studies of women who were experiencing intimate partner violence, which is where some of the discussions about male partners come in. There were findings that women with an unintended pregnancy were about four times as likely to have experienced intimate partner violence. And then in qualitative work, researchers were realizing that women experiencing intimate partner violence, their partners were restricting their ability to choose whether to have children, typically through actual destruction of contraceptive methods, but other methods as well. And so a couple of us have started to focus on this topic of reproductive coercion. I'm going to describe briefly, one large quantitative study that was published in 2010 by Dr. Elizabeth Miller. It was a cross-sectional survey that was administered to females ages 16 to 29 who were seeking care in family planning clinics. This is one of the few other large quantitative studies of this topic, and so that's sort of why I'm presenting these data. Their data were collected via audio computer-assisted surveying instrument, so the respondents entered data directly into the computer themselves. In this, because it's a relatively new field, I think we're all sort of developing our own measures and trying to figure out what we're going to ask in these survey questions. So the items that were developed for this survey were pregnancy coercion items that are listed here on the screen. Has anyone you were dating or going out with ever told you not to use birth control, told you he would have a baby with someone else if you didn't get pregnant, these types of things? And have you ever hidden birth control from a sexual partner because you were afraid he would get upset with you for using it? The other domain that we talk about is birth control sabotage. So is that someone you were dating or going out with ever taken off the condom while you're having sex so you would get pregnant, broken a condom on purpose, taken away your birth control from you so that you would get pregnant, or made you have sex without a condom so you would get pregnant? In this study, what she found was that among females who were seeking family planning clinic services, 19% reported they had ever experienced pregnancy coercion, and 15% reported contraceptive sabotage. So these are sort of the estimates that we have for what might be going on in a sample of women ages 16 to 29. In this sample, however, I want to point out that the lifetime prevalence estimates for partner violence were about over 50%, and for unintended pregnancy was about 40%. So this might be a slightly skewed population. But she did find that both pregnancy coercion and contraceptive sabotage were associated with ever having had an unintended pregnancy, which is sort of not surprising. Moving to this study, we started this study sort of needing to understand the reproductive coercion that might be happening among adolescent populations. I think we're pretty well aware that there's a huge teen pregnancy problem in this country. And so starting to understand what might be related to some of this. The few studies that have been conducted on reproductive coercion have been mainly conducted in adult populations, typically healthcare-based settings. And I think the idea of reproductive coercion has strong implications for teen pregnancy prevention. So in this study, we estimated the prevalence of reproductive coercion in a population of high school students, and we explored the demographic and social correlates of reproductive coercion. I will say that the data that I'm using come from a study that was designed to answer a different question. And so these were questions that were added on as a secondary data analysis, just some of our covariates are limiting. Our study design was an anonymous survey given to all students in 26 high schools in Kentucky. We conducted data collection for the baseline wave of data collection from January to May of 2010. And we went into the school, and the plan was to survey every single student in the school, and we did this in two ways. Either all students during one class period were surveyed, so we'd go in and every student would do the survey during homeroom or first period, or we spent the day in English classes, and just as every student came into English, they would take the survey. Those two methods were looking at whether or not that affects our results, and it probably does a little bit. In the English classes, one of our study staff is actually in the room when they're taking the survey, and in the first method, when they're in one class period, we are not there, so the, I guess, control over how the survey is being taken and the classroom control can vary a little bit in those situations. This study was IRB approved. We used a youth risk behavior survey model of obtaining parental and adolescent consent, which is basically that we sent a letter home to all of the parents, and then we asked them to contact us if they did not want their student to participate. Because we were working with high school students, we sort of argued that opting out was okay, that we didn't have to require written parental consent for every student. We did provide all students with links to depression and violence resources in two ways, a sheet of paper included with the surveys and then on printed pencils. This was just to help us ensure that any student who we weren't able to see was getting resources if they needed it. On the slide are the reproductive coercion measures that we included in the study. We did ask five separate questions. The first three talk about pregnancy coercion, or more of that domain. So in the past 12 months, has a current or previous boyfriend or girlfriend said to you, you want us to use birth control or condoms so you can sleep around with other people, sort of trying to discourage condom use. If we have a baby, you will never have to worry about me leaving you, or said to you, you would have a baby with me if you really loved me. So sort of not exactly subtle pressures to have a baby in some of these cases. The second two questions are, in the past 12 months, has a current or previous boyfriend or girlfriend not allowed you to use birth control or condoms when you wanted to, or forced you to have sex when you were not using birth control or condoms when you wanted to? For the covariates in this presentation, we're looking at grade, race, ethnicity, which we are basically defining as white versus non-white. If the student received free or reduced lunch, which is our measure of socioeconomic status, are they currently in a relationship at the time they're doing the survey? And then we asked a relationship quality question, which is thinking about your most recent boyfriend or girlfriend, which best describes the relationship. They had four choices. We communicated well, had fun together, some problems communicating, but mostly good times, lots of yelling, a few good times, and major problems. I used a chi-square test to examine gender differences in the prevalence of reproductive coercion, and then I conducted separate multivariable logistic regression models to analyze the correlates of reproductive coercion, and I did these models stratified by gender, and I used SAS. So for our response rate, our final number of surveys in the 2010 data collection was 20,806. We had about a 0.4% parental refusal rate. We did have about a 9% student response rate, student refusal rate, and males were slightly more likely to refuse to take the survey in the classroom on that day. My final analytic sample for this study is 15,994, which is 77% of the original. The second biggest drop outside of the initial refusals were, for this presentation, I excluded students who had never dated or been in a relationship, since they were not at risk of our outcomes, not at risk of reproductive coercion. These are just the characteristics of our sample by gender. I want to point out, you see that the 12th grade looks like they're slightly fewer. Part of that was this was actually a study to evaluate a violence prevention program, and the seniors were graduating out, and so often we didn't survey them in certain schools. They weren't contributing to the original study. It's about 80% white in our schools, which is slightly lower actually than the Kentucky average. About 40% of both boys and girls are receiving free and reduced lunch. The majority of students who are in the sample said they are currently in a relationship now at the time of survey. About 90% of both boys and girls. And about 6% of girls and 5% of boys said that They had a poor recent relationship quality, which were I coded as the last two items, that there was lots of yelling. Raise your yelling. These are the pregnancy coercion items. The most commonly reported item was that if you have a baby, you'll never have to worry about me leaving. About 32% of students reported this item had happened at least one time. The other items tended to be around 5 to 10%. And then we saw the same thing for the not allowed to use birth control or forced sex without using birth control. When we look at reports of reproductive coercion by gender, what we actually saw was not the differences I think I expected to see. So we actually saw that males are more likely to report that their partner said to them that they wanted to use condoms to sleep around, whereas girls were much more likely to report that their partner had said, if we have a baby, you'll never have to worry about me leaving. The three with an asterisk are the ones that were significantly different, but we saw no difference in the contraceptive interference items. I've presented just a couple models of the patterns and the correlates of looking at the using birth control or condoms wanting to sleep around for males and females, and the patterns were actually pretty consistent with a couple of exceptions. Here we see that younger grades are more likely to report that their partner is saying that they want to use condoms to sleep around. We see that for boys, race ethnicity appears to be highly predictive, and for girls, it's the free or reduced lunch that shows up as a slightly stronger predictor. But for both, being in a relationship now and having poor relationship quality are the strongest predictors of reporting reproductive coercion, this reproductive coercion item. While it's cross-sectional, our hypothesis would be that those students are in the same relationship where the reproductive coercion is occurring. I'm not going to present all of these. The patterns were remarkably consistent, and I'll summarize them in a minute. So we saw that most of the reproductive coercion items were experienced by 5 to 12% of high school students in the past year. Our most consistent correlates across the five questions were relationship quality. So students with poor relationship quality were more likely to report that reproductive coercion was occurring in those relationships. Having free or reduced lunch was consistently across all five outcomes associated with for girls, and race ethnicity across all five outcomes was associated with that for boys. The one inconsistent correlate, which I think we're still trying to figure out what it means, is the age. So younger grades are more likely to report that condoms meant their partner wanted to sleep, or they wanted to use condoms so their partner could sleep around, and they were more likely to report if you had a baby, you would never have to worry about me leaving. And so there's questions about are those things that might, I guess, sort of be a first argument, or it might be sort of a more immature argument. So the younger kids would be more likely to use them. I think one of the things that when we talk about reproductive coercion among high school students is what the communication around contraception and future plans in adults means versus in adolescents. So the most commonly reported item was being told that having a baby would mean their partner would never leave. So 40% for females and 20% for males. And so one of the questions we have is this statement perceived as the desire to have a baby now, or is it sort of a commitment issue, or it's something that people talk about, like long-term, we're going to be together and have a baby. And so my biggest question is, does contraceptive behavior change as a result of this question? And unfortunately, we are unable to answer that with this survey, but it's sort of a huge, if a teen girl hears this statement from her partner, does she stop using birth control, or does she alter her behavior to please her partner? Some limitations. We do have a sample of 26 schools that may or may not be generalizable to the rest of Kentucky, and it is self-report data, which comes with the typical biases with that. One issue is the setting in school and setting of the survey administration. So we were in classrooms, which in some places the desks are kind of close together. We did have students answering on bubble sheets, which should have prevented answers from being easily ascertained, but you never know if people are concerned about other students reading their answers, and there are some people who got, it looked like, very good at reading what question number was on the, you know, from across the way. With the topic, I do acknowledge it's a school-based sample, so we're likely missing some teens who actually became pregnant, and so that could be a huge issue, that if those people are not even in this population, these might be underestimates. And from my perspective, the biggest issue is that we're missing information on the context. We don't have a lot of partner demographics, behavior changes that may have occurred as a result of reproductive coercion, and the consequences. So did they actually become pregnant? We have remedied some of these in our second year of data collection and are hoping to do more, but we're sort of limited on a large scale. So for future directions, I think we need to have longitudinal studies that address these issues, particularly the consequences, and then think about how we can incorporate these into interventions and strategies to decrease teen pregnancy, so communication strategies and or long-acting reversible contraceptives, other sort of methods. And then just ending, understanding the male partner influences, and maybe even female partner influences, boys seem to be reporting these as often as girls, is critical for improving actually preventing teen pregnancies. I think that's it. Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you.